Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about what went wrong in Cavs Warriors, which was a basketball game that happened. And I feel bad for you if like us, you watched that game. We're also going to talk about the Rising Stars game, the Cavaliers who did not make it in place of like three Charlotte Hornets, and then tell you what to look for this week, which is a trade deadline week, a pretty busy week up here with everything going on at the Cavs. This is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving. He's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
All right, we're back. Evan, you were there. You were there at Cavs Warriors. Set the scene for us. Set the scene for what this game was like and what everything that was happening and how what the vibe was like up in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
It was, you know, it was a pretty good crowd for two bad teams going toe to toe. There was a lot of Steph Curry jerseys in the stands, I noticed, as people were filing in when I was sitting up in the media box. And, it didn't have the same normal hostility that you've grown used to when it comes to Cavs Warriors, except when Draymond Green was introduced, he was booed. And according to Steve Kerr, that's the only motivation Draymond needed, because he relishes in the role of being a villain. And he told Steve Kerr, during the game or at some point, that there's something about playing in Cleveland that just kind of brings the best out of him. And shout out to Cavs fans for doing that, because every time he scored, they booed. Every time he made an assist, he made, check the old box score here. He made 16 of those, they booed. But every time he was fouled or was part of like a turnover or something, they cheered. And it's just like a little bit of that, but kind of just a mellow game overall until the third quarter happened and the Cavs got the doors blown off them to the tune of 44-19. And then the Cavs just kind of played catch up for the fourth quarter, where they outscored Golden State 34-26. But it was just a lot of too little too late at that point. And I don't really know. I don't know what to expect of this team going forward. I mean, I do expect them to lose like this, and maybe not in such a frustrating manner, because this game felt like it was within grasp. They were only down two at halftime. But no, I don't know, buddy. It's just two very bad teams slugged it out, but the worst team ended up losing because they were outcoached, I'd say, and maybe the fact that D'Angelo Russell cooking Darius Garland doesn't help, and Draymond Green is still a very good player. So what were your thoughts, though, man? What did you think of this just overall, what we would have to classify as a basketball game?
Yeah, so I watch the game and I'm like, this is bizarre. Like, Glenn Robinson scores like 22 points for Golden State and is like as efficient as you could possibly be. Sexton puts up good numbers, but like it sort of had another good assist game, but feels like a little empty. All this sort of feels just like a little bit lackluster. Even like another good KPG game for the most part, even though he had a really bad single game plus minus. Mm-hmm. I thought I ended up like, you see a lot of good stuff from him. And yet it's just like, okay, like I guess that happened. To lose a quarter 44-19 is incredible. When you're playing against a team that won its fourth road game last night, isn't like a team that is doing great on the road. It's a team that absolutely is not good. Doesn't even have like any of its great players right now. And then you just see the stuff coming out after the game, like, you know, you get the Beeline thing where he's like, he asked, you know, if he basically like didn't really want to give the post compressor. He was a little bit terse, the other night as well, with kind of going on. He said, quote, and this is from one of the quotes he had from the game, to quote, "I don't have a lot of answers for you, though. I don't really, because it's ... it's all together, the offense and the defense." And then like Kevin Love is talking about, you know, and talking about different guys making mistakes and being asked about that, and he was like, he basically was like, something has to give here, you know, something has to give here. And like it hasn't, and like it probably, this is just like part of being a rookie, you know, this is part of having a lot of rookie guards, like they're going to make mistakes, and Ja Morant's are sort of the exception to that, you know, they're not the norm. It's just like, this is, I think, particularly feels very tough because they broke that losing streak in a pretty good performance not that long ago. And then although they lost to the Pelicans, I thought they were more competitive in that game than I would have thought, because they kind of just battled, and they battled Toronto. They kind of, everything just kind of was working, and it wasn't all good, and they didn't win those games, but like they played pretty tough. And then they, to lay an egg like this is very, it's just like, and to just be so shell-shocked by it after the game, it just feels very telling of sort of where we're at now. Even if in the context of it, it's, you know, kind of the blip overall, even though it's a loss, but it's a worse loss, and it's a blip of some of the loss they had up late. But yeah, it's not even ironically not what you want.
No, not at all. And I guess maybe to your point, this is Golden State's fourth road win, but Cleveland's only won six games at home this year. And shouts to Chris Fedor for not towing the company line on this one, but he did ask Bayline before the game, like, why are the Cavs so bad at home? I mean, to be fair, they've only won seven games on the road, 13 total, but it's true. Like, Cleveland just isn't a good home team, and there's a lot of things I think that the Cavs need to look at internally and reflect on, and maybe they make those fixes at the All-Star break, but who knows? I think the biggest thing is, we talked about this before we started recording, but I read Kelsey Russo's quick recap from last night's game, and Joe Varden retweeted it, and I wouldn't have noticed, because I usually like glance through them, see if there's anything like I might have missed, since we're Kelsey and I both were at the game last night. But she made it a point to note that, and Joe Varden pointed this out, that Bayland doesn't make adjustments at halftime, and that's a little bit worrisome and problematic in itself, especially when you're losing in such spectacular fashion in some of these games. And I don't know what to expect this team, but I thought this was a winnable game for them, and it certainly was. And then the third quarter happened, and then they played catch up in the fourth, and it's just like, okay, well, if I need any more confirmation, this rivalry pretty much is dead. Like, this is pretty much the saddest and lowest it's ever going to get. So I don't know. It's just, I don't know what's going to happen going forward. You and I have kind of touched on this. This team will probably be dramatically different post-trade deadline, but, and maybe then they maybe have a semblance of direction just to help get them through the season. But for now, they're a team that is in the middle of the ocean, that is with their ship capsizing, and they're still trying to find a way to tread water and figure the way out of it. But it looks like it's going to be sinking fast, and I really don't know if there's like an immediate answer that doesn't require something dramatic.
Yeah, and I don't even know what to make of the no halftime adjustments thing. Like, that just feels like what? You know?
Yeah, it's just like David Blatt. It feels like a David Blattism where, like, oh, what I did worked in Europe, so I'm not going to adapt. I don't know.
Like, I don't even exactly know how to, like, frame that. That's, you know, just, it's like, I like, what do we even put? It's that just feels like ridiculous to me.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And we don't know how much money Bayline's being paid. We don't know what the terms of his contract are, or if, like, we know it's for 5 years. That's all we know. You know, we know he's Cleveland's coach for at least the next 5 years, but him not making adjustments at halftime, and like I just said, the Cavs have had some pretty incredible in the worst way possible losses this season, and you're not doing anything to fix that. And then most of his post-game pressers are like him grumbling and just getting annoyed at the fact that the Cavs have all these bad habits, where it's bad turnovers or porous perimeter defense, or the opposing team who likely makes adjustments exploiting a matchup that they find that Cleveland doesn't adapt themselves to. It's just, it makes a lot of sense now that we know that for a fact that Bayland refuses to make any halftime adjustments. And yeah, no, that's, it's just, it's flabbergasting to me.
That game last night is just in itself, just like everything that is like sort of wrong with the Cavs this year. It just feels like that game says a lot about it. And it's like, I'll be very clear, like Monday night, they play a Knicks team that they've had some troubles with this year, and they have another kind of run. They have another kind of busy-ish week. We'll talk about that in the last segment of the show, but it's not like they finally get like, they still have to like a little bit to go here before the All-Star break. And, you know, it's just like, they have to get there, like sort of in best one piece they can. So this is their week. Knicks, Cavs is Monday in Cleveland. They go to Oklahoma City on Wednesday, and then they're off until Sunday. But then they get to right before the All-Star break, they get the Clippers, and then they get the Hawks. So they got another really bad team in the Hawks, but they're playing a really good Clippers team, and we'll see how many people on that Clippers team play or whatever. But they have four more games before the break, and they have to get through them. And they're playing two playoff teams and two other really bad teams, and it's. I don't quite know exactly do what to expect or what we should expect. It just feels like Saturday is just the example of like this team is just still kind of in a real bad way. And I don't blame people for feeling the way they do. And I know I think for Kevin, I think for a lot of the vets, I know that this is pretty frustrating and debilitating. I don't think any of this sits well with Colin. I don't think it sits well with anyone, but I think for the vets and for how wired Colin is to compete, it sucks. And I think for John Beilein, I can't imagine that he is like loving his life right now. Evan, any final thoughts as we kind of get out of this first segment?
I know we'll touch on this again in the future because you talked me off the ledge last time, but I think I genuinely think John Beilein's leading this locker room, and I don't know if he will be Cleveland's coach by the end of the season, just because there's always was that stigma and fear about college coaches trying to adapt to the game, especially for a college lifer like him. And I think, like you said, this game against Golden State was just the microcosm of every single thing that was wrong with the Cavs this season, where individually there was a lot of impressive performances, but overall the entire thing was just frustrating to watch. And that's just basically where I'm at right now as they head into this Knicks matchup on Monday.
That's about right. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about some of the other things going on with the Cavs right now, some of the other stuff, particularly the Rising Stars game, and we'll be back to talk about that right after this. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all of the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Cavs is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Cavaliers fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. And that is not just any podcast listener, it's a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Cavs fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated, has disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. Evan, we're back. Okay, so no Cavs make the Rising Stars game or whatever it's called. I have no idea what it's called at this point. Colin Sexton, to me, is the big snub. You wrote a piece at Forbes about how you think KBJ should have at least been in there. I wrote about him as well last week. I think he should have been at least in the discussion, although I probably wouldn't have had him in there. I don't think any Darius Garland is a surprise. Colin kind of just said, like, it's just another thing for me. It's like another slight. I've always kind of been counted out. It's just exactly how I would have expected him to take that and then try to use it. But who do you feel is like the biggest? A, do you feel like that these guys are being gypped in some way? And B, who do you feel like has the biggest case for being gypped?
Well, I think the international versus U.S. format was cool back when you had a little bit more of a diverse pool to pick from, but now I think it is thinning things a little bit because Mo Wagner, I don't think really does a lot for me. Zvi Mikhalik from the Pistons, again, doesn't do much for me either. no indictment of these guys as a player either, but at the same time, like, it just, there's better rookies and sophomores out there. And I'm also thinking that maybe if you were already named to the All-Star game, if you look at Luka Doncic and Trae Young, that should eliminate you from the list as well. But just to jump back to the Cat, that's just my me standing on the soapbox. Yeah. I got more in a second. But no, coming to the Cavs, I definitely think Colin was a snub. It's actually surprising. Shout out to friend of the pod, Ty Windish. I give him a lot of shout outs because Ty and I talk every day. But Ty joked with me saying, it's like the assistant coaches watched the first month of the season and then said, saw Devonte Graham and Eric Pascal were like absolutely dominating for their respective teams, and that's what got them in. And I joked about it in the recap last night, but Eric Pascal had let's just be frank, a lot of Warriors had a pretty good night against the Cavs last night, but he had an all right night. But no, Colin definitely was snubbed, and I feel bad for him because he's worked really hard. He's Cleveland's leading into this season. He's Cleveland's leading scorer. He's, for all things considered, switched from playing the one to the two, and he's defending twos primarily on most nights, while Darius is given the primary task of defending the team's point guard. It just sucks overall. Like, I feel bad, and maybe since Trey sprained his ankle last night, or maybe he opts out to play, Collins still gets in, but at this point, a slight is a slight, and there's a few players that you can make a stink about that could not have made it. And I mean, I guess just on the grander scheme of things, I'm still surprised like players like Michael Porter Jr. didn't make it. And then like you see like guys like Jackson Hayes, who told the NBA to quote unquote suck his you know what, and Matisse Thybulle, you know, is having a stellar rookie campaign as well. He didn't even probably get considerations, but he's
Matisse like, Thybulle's agent's doing a lot of work though.
Yeah, no, for sure. But
kudos to that guy. Or woman. Yeah. I don't know who his agent is.
Either way, it's just I think the NBA really dropped the ball on this one. I think this whole All-Star format with the whole scoring change and everything, like, that's stupid. And I think all this is just lame, but I don't know. I'm indifferent at this point too, because I'm fine with some of these players. Like, if you look at like Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant making it for the U.S. team, like, yeah, I'm good with that. And then Brandon Clark, like, has arguably been a top rookie in this year's draft class, so I'm okay with that. And then, like, but then there's players like Miles Bridges and PJ Washington and Zion Williamson, and who make it. And I'm just like, I don't know about that one. And then it's, I don't know. Like, what about you? Who do you think's a snub and who do you think didn't deserve to make it at this point?
I think if you're cutting, it's one of the, it's not Devonte Graham, because I think he's good and like a really cool story. I don't think you cut Zion, because like Zion obviously has not played a ton and he's had his issue, and like there's been the issues with that. But the guy is, he's Zion Williamson. Like, he's going to draw eyeballs, and you know, he's going to, like, I don't, that's not, I would have more of an issue with Wash, if from the U.S. side in particular. It'd be the non, it'd be the PJ Washington Bridges, and you know, one of them make it's fine, but it just like, how did three of those guys make it? And like, I think also just like Colin has a really strong case. I don't think KPJ, I like KPJ a lot. I'm a fan. I don't think his case is particularly strong, because missed 10 games, you know, has some of his efficiency numbers are not very good. There's certainly, I think, some issues with him in that regard. But I think if you look at Colin, team's leading scorer right now, has become a more efficient player overall. I think without question has started to really become a much more well-rounded basketball player. I think certainly has improved on defense in a way that wasn't the case like a year ago, you know, like that, like he has improved in that way. He's showing some signs the last couple weeks of the passing stuff getting at least a little bit better. And he's become like at the very least, like the guy can score. I just don't see how he on that sort of alone, like, isn't in the game. I think, you know, it's a small gripe and whatever, but I think there's a very legitimate case for Colin to be in there. And I have a hard time seeing like any of the guys. Like, I think if you look at the list, there are clearly guys like Ja and stuff that are locks. I don't see how Colin just like isn't on the roster in some way. Like, that is just weird to me. I think he, with the scoring average, with the improvements he's made, just some of the things he does really well, I think he should be there. Like, I could, like, even though I didn't totally agree with it, like, I could understand, like, first season, first part of the year, Colin Sexton was pretty bad, and that's how you get Kevin Knox in the game. I don't really see the argument for that for him this year, for anything like that.
No, I absolutely agree with you. It's just, I'm still, like, kind of flabbergasted. I know when they announced the rosters in the NBA, like, emailed me the announcement. I was going through the list and, like, looking at the, as bad as it sounds, mugshots that they have for the players, and I'm like, wait a minute, where's Colin? So I went through and read it, like, slowly again, and I'm like, he really didn't make it, huh? And it's just, no, it's a damn shame, and I hope maybe some NBA players on Twitter, like Channing Frye, and I know people like to meme him a lot, but Kendrick Perkins saying, like, it's a shame that Colin didn't make it, and then you have, I haven't really paid much attention to social, but, like, his teammates saying it as well, and even Bayline saying, like, at the pregame, he's like, yeah, no, he should have made it, but, like, this is a learning opportunity for him to grow from and just use it as motivation going forward. And, like, people like to joke about it, but when he was snubbed last year because of Kevin Knox getting the pick over him, which, you know, a very dumb look in hindsight, but maybe Sexton uses this as motivation just to go out there and, like, kill people because he's the type of player who needs to play with a reason to have a chip on his shoulder, and this is a perfect reason to do so. But I'm holding out hope that with Trey spraining his ankle last night, that maybe he won't overdo it on All-Star Weekend, because I have a feeling he's going to be in the three-point contest as well, and I don't know if they do the fundamentals contest anymore, but maybe he's going to get picked for that. But,
and he's an All-Star starter, I believe.
Yes, so he's going to have a full weekend, so maybe the rookie-sophomore game doesn't mean as much to him, so that's what I'm holding out hope on, that since Colin statistically is making a case, and that maybe that there's a little bit of an outcry online, and we have now learned that Adam Silver does pay, and the NBA does pay attention when people are upset online about things, and they try to, like, come up with some solution to make it better. Maybe that's the way Colin gets in. But like I said before, a snub's a snub, and I'm sure Colin's still going to feel that way, that, like, maybe this is, like, a pity vote for him then. And I'm excited to see what kind of Sexton we get going forward, where he's just kind of like, fuck you to everybody, and just wants to go out there and be an absolute killer. And, like, I'm fine with it as someone who covers this team and is a fan of this team watching them. It's just, I feel bad, because you can tell, like, he has genuinely put in a lot of work this offseason, like, to try and make himself better. And like you said, he's had a much more efficient scoring season, and he's starting to round out his game a little bit, and we're starting to get a better idea of what the kind of player he's going to be. And I think rewarding all that hard work by letting him go to Chicago as a rookie sophomore all-star would have done a lot for his confidence levels, and just, like, saying, like, you know what, you're doing a really good job. Go and celebrate yourself for one night before you take the rest of the weekend off.
Yeah. I agree with that. I don't think there's much else left to say. I'll be curious to see if he does end up getting in there. It'd make a lot of sense to me if Colin was, like, some kind of replacement for Trey, for somebody else, if they don't play. You know, we'll see what, if Zion plays or something like that. Like, I don't quite, you know, we don't exactly know what the plan is for a lot of these guys, but we'll see. Here's what he said to per The Athletic is, quote, "I knew I deserved to be there. I knew the hard work every day coming here and playing the game. I knew I deserved to be out there, but I took the good with it. Hey, just continue to build. Can't be too mad because it is what it is. Second year in a row. Just have to take it." And I'll just say, like, people will be like, oh, this, people at home I know will be like, this is silly. Like, why do we care about this? This matters to players. And I think when something like this matters to players, it's worth it on us to, and with media, and not in this case, but the media for the All-Star game, for example, is 25% of voting. Like, I think if it's something that matters to the players and we have any sort of role in talking about it, I think we should kind of take the same approach to it. Okay, one last break, and then Evan and I will be back to look ahead to this week of Cavs basketball. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. All right, Evan, we're back. Last segment on this show for Monday, February 3rd. We are looking at a week where, again, they play twice. They play Monday against the Knicks at home, Wednesday in Oklahoma City against the Thunder, and then they're off until Sunday after the All-Star break. Imagine we'll get some practices after the All-Star break, or excuse me, after the trade deadline, not the All-Star break. I spoke there, but I think the big thing here is clearly the trade deadline. That is going to be the shaping thing of the week. Nothing else to me really comes close, and it's just very quiet right now. Anytime I've poked around anything, it's just sort of, maybe we'll get stuff the last 4 hours, but it just feels very, very quiet right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a quiet deadline this year. I don't know if Cleveland's really going to be a big mover and shaker like they usually have been in years past. I wonder. I think Dellavedova is going to stay here past this deadline, and I don't know if Cleveland will buy him out just because he's a bit of Bayline's old reliable, and the fact that if he needs to throw a veteran guard out there or somebody with a veteran presence, other than Kevin and Tristan, Deli's the guy he leans on, so I think Deli's safe, but I'm curious to see what the Cavs do with Brandon Knight and John Hanson. By the time this goes up, you and I both did trade deadline previews with Forbes. I did note that that the Jordan Clarkson trade was a little maybe indicative of what's going to happen for the Cavs at the trade deadline this year. Like, I know a lot of fans, and God bless Cleveland fans, but they overrate their trade assets to the highest degree. It's like almost to a fault, but I think maybe getting a couple second round picks and maybe an expiring contract or a player that's on a two or not an expiring contract, but a half-year contract, and maybe it's a player that the Cavs can kind of kick the tires on, like Dante Exum, and see what they have. Like, I think those kind of returns are more palatable and reasonable for the Cavs this time around. And I don't really think there's going to be much of a market out there for a team that's looking to clear their books as much as they can, because this free agency class isn't really anything to write home about. And I think it's just, unless something absolutely crazy happens and like the Cavs are a third team in like a major deal, I just don't see anything huge happening. And I think this roster may largely remain the same sans Brandon Knight and John Henson past February 6th. And then we kind of regroup and figure out where we go from here. And then I don't know. What about you? What do you think is going to happen with the Cavs come this Thursday?
I think the point you made about being a third team in a deal is sort of the logical endpoint for me. When I look at the stuff that's happening, when I look at, you know, everything that's kind of going on around the team right now, everything that is kind of the logical way is sort of these things can make sense. I do think it's just a team that can move some salary around, kind of be a landing spot. I don't know if they're, I'll be curious to see how much of their flexibility next summer Kobe Altman is willing to eat into. I would imagine he wants something to play with in terms of like going after anything, just having the ability to add something of value next summer. I don't think you want to get rid of all that cap space, but I wonder if they are going to like kind of be willing to play third fiddle in some kind of trade, figure that out, and then just get something in terms of renting out some cap space. You know, I don't know if, you know, how I wouldn't be super, super interested in taking on a lot of bad money, but take on some, you know, get something back. Someone like Exum is the goal, but even if it's like a vet of some kind that has just like a weird contract, like you could certainly do worse and maybe you buy that guy out anyway. I don't feel like we're getting, Tristan, there's no way Tristan's getting traded unless something wild happens. I don't think Deli's gone. I don't think Kevin's gone, which is its whole like weird kind of thing. Henson and Knight feel more like buyout guys to me, but I would be surprised if they're on the team like much beyond the trade deadline. It just doesn't feel like they really fit right now. Kevin's just the wild card, you know. I think more than anything else, just we don't really know what's the. I doesn't feel like the market for him is very robust. Maybe a team will make kind of a last minute thing to go out and get Love or whatever, but
maybe Sacramento. I don't know. They feel like a team that's desperate enough to kick the tires on Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe the Portland thing just somehow happens unexpectedly. Maybe Phoenix unexpectedly kind of happens. But right now, it does not feel like a Kevin thing is going to happen. Again, if something happens, I don't think the Cavs are getting like a PG-level haul. They're not going to get that. They're going to get stuff that is useful, but it's not going to be like this overwhelming thing where they're working from an absolute position of strength like I think a lot of people would like them to. It's just I don't think that's the reality of what the market's going to bear out.
No, I would agree with that. And it's just coming kind of hard to palate as well that we know what kind of player Kevin Love is. Like, he would be very, very good on a team that is contending for the playoffs. But, like, just seeing the return package is, like, somebody like Hassan Whiteside and Zach Collins, we'll just say. And the Cavs end up buying out Hassan Whiteside because you don't want him touching that young and impressionable locker room. And you think Bayland's hands are full now, just wait till Hassan Whiteside gets into the mix.
Hassan Whiteside is just like, post me up and I'm going to chase blocks and John Bieland's going to lose his shit. That's like generally what would happen.
You know what's wild, though, is Damian Lillard's like having this 06 Kobe kind of year, and he's turning Hassan Whiteside into like a net positive asset. And
okay, can I tell you why my theory on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dame Lillard is just like the most underrated culture is often a bullshit word in when we talk about it. Damian Lillard is the only guy like I think that makes it like, or at least like non LeBron guy, I guess. But I think LeBron does it, even though it's a little more dramatic, let's say. Dame Lillard like walks that freaking walk, and the guy is just able to do that stuff. And I don't know what it is about him. I've read stuff about him. I think Dame's like one of my favorite players solely because I think he just ends up being like a really good dude who makes situations just kind of work in a way that other guys just are willing to, can't do, whatever. He makes the word culture real, and I think that's why like Hassan ends up being like as useful as he is in that scenario. And that's why like guys like Rodney Hood go there and like rave about it, you know. I think all that stems from Dame, and that's if you're the Cavs, like the kind of guy you want being like your future 10-pole star. You want your own version of Dame, like that's 100% the kind of guy you really want in a market like Cleveland.
And the problem is that the young guys that they do have don't really like talking to the media to begin with, so. Maybe there's a guy in the draft this year that will be that tentpole guy that can kind of just be the vocal leader on and off the court.
It's not even that. It's also just that. It's like you look at Dame and it's just like the guy is one of one. And I don't think the guys that can do what he's doing culture-wise really exist as often or as free or as common as you might think. So it might just be one of those things that's like sort of impossible to define to some degree.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if there's a, maybe it's a little bit of Cleveland being too greedy. I'm sure everyone at this point has read the report saying that they're looking and hoping to get a first round pick in return for Kevin Love. But then in turn, because of Kevin just kind of having his meltdown and everything off on the court and off the court, and his just overall bad body language, teams are kind of saying like, you telling the Cavs like, you need to attach assets to for us to take on this contract. Like, I don't think anyone's gonna win in this trade. Like, either like Cleveland stands their ground, doesn't move Kevin, and pisses off their best player on the roster even more, or Cleveland bends the knee and tries to do right by Kevin and they don't get a package in return that helps them in this renaissance because it's not a rebuild. Or it's just, I don't think, when it coming from at least from Cleveland's perspective, the team against Kevin Love is going to end up winning. I should say that for sure, unless like they give up like an absolute haul. But I don't know. I mean, I guess the only other option for Cleveland is if they move Kevin. Like, I touched on this last night in the recap. If they lower their ceiling but raise their floor to where maybe they start thinking like what they have right now, and they slowly build towards making the playoffs within the next 2 years, but like they don't peak as a championship caliber team or a conference finals team, but like second round at best team for now. Like, maybe that's what Cleveland's kind of striving for, just to get back to the playoffs to kind of get some semblance of normalcy again. But I don't even know if that's okay. It's like it's weird. This team has no direction right now. They have no idea what they're doing, like culture wise and what direction wise. So I don't know where they're gonna go from here.
Let's wrap it up on this. I'm gonna list the names of the people that are theoretically on the trade dead block, and then you and I on the trade block, and then you and I will say, are they gonna be traded or not? Okay. Kevin Love, yes or no?
No.
I agree. Tristan Thompson, yes or no?
No. And he gets an extension.
Yeah, that's the fun outcome. Brandon Knight.
No, and he gets bought out.
John Henson.
Yes.
I agree. I think Henson's the moving piece in a three-team deal. I think of the expiring, he just feels like the one that team at that number can talk itself into. And I do also think Brandon Knight probably gets bought out as well. Matthew Dellavedova.
No, and he'll stay in Cleveland.
Agreed. And then because he's technically expiring, Ante Zizic.
No, and I'll still feel really bad for him.
I just kind of hope Ante gets a fresh start somewhere. I hope he's just like a throw-in in a three team.
Yeah, maybe he's the piece that helps move Kevin along. But no, it's just, yeah, I agree. He needs a fresh start somewhere at this point.
Yeah, so this is going to be a weird week. Again, they play Monday. We'll recap that. We're going to be booking some fun guests ahead and after the deadline. We're working on what we're going to do on deadline day itself. So that'll be really fun to do. But Evan, this was not a fun one, but thanks for as always coming on and doing this podcast, my man.
No problem, no problem. Before we go, real quick, who do you have winning the Super Bowl since recording this on Super Bowl Sunday?
I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
I'm going with the Chiefs as well. So we probably just gave them the double kiss of death. So
yeah,
good
so
luck
if you're listening
to the Niners.
To this is
going to
drop a little bit after the Super Bowl. You can tweet us and tell us wrong, and we won't really care. But you can find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. Evan's on Twitter and AmNotEvan. Check out Locked On Cavs wherever you get podcasts. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow ahead of Cavs Knicks, which will be certainly a basketball game that we will have to watch and talk about. We'll talk to you after that.